Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycast.
On Joy Now, Transpositions. A safe place for trans communities, our friends and our allies to share our experiences. We'll discuss our issues, our challenges and our successes. We'll occasionally make you cry and hopefully we'll educate and inspire you. Welcome to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Melbourne. It is Tuesday night. It is exactly 8 p.m. and you're listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9. I'm Megsy. I'm your host for tonight. Unfortunately, my lovely co-host, Michelle, unfortunately is called in sick. So guess what? You just got me. Sorry. But what I will say is I've got an amazing guest who's actually coming with me. So my guest that I've got for tonight is the amazing and very beautiful Grace Lee. Grace is a psychologist. She's also from Transgender Victoria. And she's also recently done her thesis on trans people who transition later in life. So we are going to be speaking to Grace a little bit later on in the show. And we're going to be talking about she's actually sitting right across from me at the moment. Say hello to Grace.
Hello, everybody.
So that is Grace. Yes, she's definitely with us. Now, what I'm going to do is I do want you to call us or send us text messages or emails and those kinds of things. So if you do want to reach out to us, well, this is how you go and do it.
We're listening to you. SMS 0427 JOY 949. Email onair at joy.org.au. Or call us 1300 JOY 949.
Okay, so that's the deal. So if you can messages, that's great because I do love getting text messages from you. Also, if you want to send a get well text message to Michelle, I'll make sure that she gets it. Now, I'm going to say that I do have some amazing music lined up tonight, as I usually try to do as best as what I possibly can. I am going to be starting off tonight with some Ariana Grande. Bit of a problem? Nah, I don't know. She's all right. So here we go. We've got some Ariana Grande. You are listening to Transpositions. Joy 94.9. Stay with us, guys.
I'm not afraid of the dark.
Oh, you gotta love, you have to absolutely love Ariana Grande. Now, it is time for my good friend, the news. So I normally have Michelle doing the news, but unfortunately, as I said, she's crook, so she's not here with us tonight. So it's just me that you have to put up with reading the news. Okay, so our good friend, the battleground over North Carolina transgender law intensifies as lawmakers reconvene. Thousands of people have flocked to North Carolina, the capital on Monday, to show support and disdain for the law that has thrust the state into international spotlight over its restrictions on transgender bathroom access and gay rights. The measure puts the state at centre of a debate over equality, privacy and religious freedom as the state proposes legislation seen as discriminatory against gay and transgender people in the wake of the US Supreme Court ruling last year that legalised same-sex marriage. Leading Republican lawmaker in the state have so far shown little willingness to back down. Now, a transgender editor murdered in Bangladesh. The editor of the transgender magazine and his friends have been murdered in Bangladesh by suspected Islamic extremists. The suspected Islamic extremists and militants hacked to death the leading gay rights activist and a friend in an apartment in the Bangladeshi capital. Monday's killings took place 2 days after the university professor was slain in a similar fashion in an attack claimed by the Islamic State. More than 500,000 people boycott Target over its transgender bathroom policy. Now, this one's kind of a bit curious, and there's some crazy stuff going on the internet about this one. A conservative Christian activist group has gained more than 500,000 signatures and is counting from people pledging to boycott Target over its transgender bathroom policy. Now, we just might clarify that's Target in the United States and not Target here in Australia. We certainly respect there are a wide variety of perspective and opinions, says Target spokesperson Molly Snyder. As a company that firmly stands behind what it means to offer our team an inclusive place to work and our guests an inclusive place to shop, we continue to believe that this is the right thing for Target. Target made this position public in a blog post last week stating the company welcomes transgender team members and guests to use the restroom and the fitting room facility that corresponds with their gender identity. The announcement comes as legislation on transgender issues in multiple states has spurred several major corporations and businesses to take a stance on LGBTI rights. Now, looking at all the bad news and all doom and gloom and those kinds of things, guess what? I've got some good news. I love my good news. Okay. So good news is the Victorian Pride Centre. Now, this one I'm really excited about. The Victorian government will spend $15 million to create Australia's first Pride Centre in the upcoming 2016 state budget. Now, I think Grace is getting really excited with this one.
Yeah, that's such good news.
It is. It's
going to be really, I think, shows what the government's prepared to do, and they put their money where their mouth is these days.
Which is amazing. Yeah. Now, the final design and location and timeframe for the Pride Centre will be decided in consultation with the LGBTI community and health professionals and is expected to be within Melbourne CBD. The centre will, and for the trans community, this is really important, the centre will offer medical services staffed by doctors trained in LGBTI-specific issues, including gender dysphoria, transitioning and sexual health, and will be free for anyone with a Medicare card. It will serve as a hub for LGBTI support groups and organisations and share ideas and resources with an aim to support quality, diversity and inclusion. Which is really good. I'm looking forward to this so much. The 2016 state budget will also include $6.4 million for the expansion of the gender dysphoria health services to meet the rapidly growing demand from Victoria's transgender and gender diverse population. Now, the $6.4 million in new funding will be allocated specifically to the Monash Health, an agency that is struggling to treat 100 plus patients who seek out health services every year. Now, last year, the budget gave an additional funding to the Royal Children's Hospital for gender dysphoria treatment for children aged 5 to 17, which was $6 million. So they're doing the same thing for the adults. Now, the Royal Children's Hospital said that the funding doubled their capacity and halved their waiting list, which is really important for kids, and I think really all trans people in total. Now, the funding that also was allocated will help the Monash Health expand their gender dysphoria clinic and deliver a more comprehensive, multidisciplinary psychiatric and psychological assessment service, additional counselling services, plus health education and training to build clinical care for transgender Victorians. As I said, I'm really excited about this one. Now, the government will aim to roll out gender dysphoria services in the new Pride Centre once it's up and running. Victorian Premier Daniel Andrews said, "Victoria is doing what every other state should be doing and what the Commonwealth government should be doing." He also went on to say that everyone in the state should have the right to feel respected and safe and being exactly who they are. For being exactly who they are, I should say. Equality is not negotiable in Victoria. Discrimination is wrong in any form, and that is not negotiable either. And I think, really, when you think about it, that is some wise words which those 500,000 Americans who are trying to petition to keep trans and gender diverse people out of change rooms in Target, or for something for the governor, Pat McCrory, from North Carolina. He can take a really good lesson in what good government looks like, because seeing what Dan Andrews has done, I think it's what every premier in Australia should do. What do you think, Grace?
Ah, absolutely. It's a real sign of leadership, and it's so important that, through sort of lobbying, through consumer involvement with government here, and especially through that LGBTI task force, the LGBTI community are getting representation, and the politicians, the ministers are actually listening to us. So we're making some real inroads, I think.
Yeah. I think this is a really good thing for the state, and it really does show what all states in Australia should be doing. Victoria did lead the way with gender dysphoria services at the Royal Children's Hospital, with being the only centre, from what I can recall, in Australia who's doing that exclusively for children. And now we're broadening the funding for trans adults and also having the Pride Centre. I think this is really good, and I think this is what good government should look like in this state, and as I said, any state within Australia. Now, I'll tell you what we are going to do. I want you to stay with us. I'm going to play some short messages, and then I'm going to come back and I'm going to play another good track for you guys. I do have some Demi Lovato sitting there just waiting to play it. I've also got some Ellie Goulding. I've also got some Jessie J. So you are going to have to stay here in the show. Mm-hmm. You're going to have to stay listening to us. We do have Grace. She is going to be answering some questions, and we're going to be talking to her very shortly. So don't go anywhere. I want you to stay with me. Okay, because you are listening to Transpositions here, Joy 94.9. Of course, the gayest station in the nation.
Joy 94.9.
This is Adam Katz. Help keep Joy out loud and proud. Become a member now. Call 1-300-JOY-949.
Your words and all your lies. Oh, 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 I really don't
one to me, Lovato. You have to care. We all care, don't we? Don't we, Grace?
Oh, we do care. We absolutely.
We do care. I think caring's important, so, which is one of the reasons why you're here. You care.
Sharing and caring.
Sharing and caring. I like the sound of that. Now, I want to clarify something, because I think I made a bit of a booby before. And I said, you're a psychologist.
You did call me a psychologist, that's right. And I'm not a psychologist, because that's a very specific term. Yeah. You'd have to have a degree in psychology, and I don't have a degree in psychology.
So what exactly, where do you finish the picture?
Right, well, so I'm a counsellor and psychotherapist. So that means I've been trained, and I've been studying for quite a few years to work with people in very much in a form of talking therapy, using a lot of the things that psychologists do. So everything from kind of cognitive behavioural therapy through to sort of psychoanalytic sort of approaches. But what I haven't done is all the statistics. So there's some aspects of psychology, especially at undergraduate and postgraduate level, that covers a lot more research than I've done and covers a lot more around sort of how the brain actually works, you know, the neurobiology and so on. So I've just focused on therapy, how to help people.
Okay.
On a one-on-one basis.
So it sounds like, so at a frontline level, you're there working with the people, but there's a lot more in terms of the analytics of how the brain works, but also the statistical level as well, when you look at a population and what happens in that space.
Yeah, and understanding what are effective treatments, and psychologists can also get involved in sort of diagnostics and so on, which is something that I don't do.
So that's what the difference is. There you go. You learn something
every
day.
We're all here to help you.
Okay, yeah, you're going to psychoanalyze me?
No, not tonight.
not tonight, okay. So you've been working on this thesis for quite a while now. Exactly how long have you been working
on it? Well, it was a year. I started at the beginning of last year. Mm-hmm. And my sort of kind of main interest was around the mental health of trans and gender diverse people. And when I started to look more into the research that had been done, I guess there were two really important things. One was there is some research out there, but actually not very much. Very few sort of, sort of research articles and so on about the mental health of transgender and gender diverse people. There's quite a lot about the LGBTI community at large, if you like, and certainly around gay and lesbian and bisexual mental health, but not much about identity. And there has been a tendency to kind of lump some of that stuff together. Now, but what we do know from a number of very big studies that have been done both in Australia and in the UK, it's been that those people who do identify as transgender have very, very high rates of depression and anxiety and phenomenally high rates of suicide. And it's like, well, what's going on here? I think the sort of kind of the research that has been done obviously is pointing towards what I think called minority stress, which is a concept that came out about, 30 years ago. But and again, was born out of a lot of studies around gay and lesbian populations, especially in the US. And, it's really around the fact that when you identify in a minority, you are prone, and we see this every day now, to being attacked one way or another. You might be attacked in the media, you might be attacked physically, you might be abused, you might suffer prejudice and discrimination, you might find it difficult to get a job, you might find it difficult to get housing. So people like us can be marginalised, and we can find it quite difficult to sort of deal with sort of what situations that other, if you like, cisgendered privileged people would not have a second thought about. And that just leads to a genuine sort of build-up of anxiety and depression in particular, and difficulty in coping with situations, because it's not a case of, the anxiety is not something that, for some people, maybe, the anxiety is a genuine fear because they are being abused in the street, for example, just walking down the street. So they don't want to leave home for, might be a situation. So we, I think, from the perspective of how to help, obviously one of the things is that therapists do need to understand what it's like to walk in the shoes of someone who's transgender. And that can be, I think we all know that when we go and see, be it a therapist or a doctor or whatever, a practitioner, for many of us, we find we're actually having to educate the practitioner what it means to be trans. And so from a mental health perspective, many people are starting on the back foot. You know, they need help, but they don't know where to go. They think they're also going to be discriminated against. So part of what I was trying to do was to sort of investigate this and try and be able to sort of translate this into sort of some way that people could understand what it means to be trans or transgender.
So the stigmatism that people experience being trans is enough to, would you say it's enough to cause anxiety and depression issues?
Yes, absolutely. Significant. You know, I'd like them, you know, large numbers. So, you know, 60-70% of people in the trans community will have had about a depression in the last 12 months. It's statistics like that, which are way above the general population numbers.
Which is kind of scary. What can be done?
Yeah, well, in the big picture stuff, it's about educating everybody in our community so that we see a much higher level of understanding and acceptance and less discrimination. But then we know that's a kind of a slow process. We're all trying to do that.
We see lots of right-wing extremists actually do some pretty crazy things to trans people, and we've seen this happen in the US where, for example, North Carolina, we see imagery of people standing out the front of bathrooms trying to prevent trans people from going in. We see other cases where trans people actually are assaulted in bathrooms as well for just going to pee.
I mean, America is, in this respect, is quite an unpleasant place to be. So the number of trans people who are violently assaulted and who are killed, murdered through hate crimes in the, you know, the US are significant. There's huge numbers every year, and that's a tragedy, but it puts so much pressure on everyone else. And obviously things are a little bit different here. I think we're very fortunate in Melbourne that we have, you know, a relatively safe place to be open about our identity, but that doesn't take away the reality is that, you know, you can still feel quite threatened, you can feel very uncomfortable on the street or in the workplace. So, you know, it's important that that trans people feel comfortable seeking professional help, being able to see counsellors and psychologists, and feeling that they, you know, that they're confident that those people actually understand something about the situations they're facing.
I think one of the biggest and scariest things for someone who's trans is actually the taking that first step of really talking to someone about it.
Absolutely, and it can be very difficult because depending on your age, and I mean, one of the things that interested me was that I was looking at people in sort of older age groups, like 40 and onwards, and that's probably because I fit into that. Mm. So it's part of my own personal experience.
Likewise too.
And many of those people are often, they're coming out now, so they've actually lived a life in the closet. They've not been able to talk to anyone. They've felt deeply ashamed in many cases. It's something that they wanted to maintain as a secret, and they've maintained a secret throughout their lives. Now they've come out, and I thought, right, let's understand what that process is about and how well do they do it and how do they cope, and what can we use that information for in terms of teaching others to make that transition so much easier for them.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I tell you, I want to talk about that a lot more. We're sort of really talking about the older population transitioning later in life compared to transitioning younger in life. But you know what? I've got to. I do have to go through to some messages, unfortunately.
Okay.
I know. So make sure that you do stick with us. I've got some Ellie Goulding on the way. So you are listening to Transpositions on Joy. Stick around. Send some messages through to Grace. She does want to answer some questions. So if you do have something that you do want to ask of her with regards to her study or just being trans and wanting a psychologist, well, not a psychologist, a psychotherapist.
Psychotherapist
answer question. Yeah, that's the way it should be.
Give it a go. I'll ask anyway.
Yeah, ask anyway. You're listening to Transpositions on Joy. Don't go anywhere. Stay tuned right here.
Talking deep like it was mad love to you. really liked you. I bet that's why I keep on thinking about your shame. You said I was good, so I poured it down, so I poured it down. And now I don't understand it. You don't mess with love, you mess with the truth. And I know I shouldn't say it, but my heart don't understand why I got you on my mind.
Got you on my mind. You're listening there. You're listening to Transpositions. I've definitely got you on my mind because we're talking to you. Of course, aren't we? I'm
and
Grace.
And me. And we're talking... I love Ellie Goulding as well. Too.
Yeah, Ellie's actually really good. That was, if you didn't know, on my mind, Ellie Goulding. Mm. Yeah, good track. Now, Grace, we were talking before about your thesis that you
did.
Tell me about your thesis exactly. Right. What's it about?
So, okay, it's a study on older transgender women in and around Melbourne, so in Victoria. Okay. So age range from about 40 through to into the 70s.
Okay.
So we're looking at people who've only recently come out, and I was interested in how they came out to their families and friends. So they had to come out to significant others. Mm-hmm. A couple of them were sort of also in the process of transitioning, but it was just, we were really looking at people, you know, around that sort of time. So, and I guess, you know, the sort of key, so part of the way I did this was to actually interview 8 people. And each interview was an hour long or a bit longer than that. And I recorded it and then I transcribed it. So I've got 62,000 words of transcripts. So there was a massive amount of information here.
You would have been really busy typing away.
I was doing a lot of typing and a lot of reading because I had to read it and read it and read it. What happened was that each of these people, opened their hearts to tell me their story. And, you know, it was a wonderful experience for me that they were telling me things possibly they hadn't actually shared with anyone else or very, very few people. And we kind of tracked their lives from really their first experience of a sense of difference, of being different and being different in a gender perspective. I mean, it's a bit difficult. You know, when do kids really start to understand genders? It's probably around about 4 or 5. And I think one of the clear things that sort of one of the first things that kind of came out was that people realized that they were different, and then they also suddenly realized that that was not acceptable. Mm. That to be, you know, to be behaving in a cross-gender sort of way was disapproved of.
Okay.
Now, some of them picked that up because they kind of saw the signals. And I mean, I can sort of, I'll just read you some of the things that some people have said. And one of them sort of was that, you know, they'd actually been, they were at kind of school, you know, they were about 4, so they were in kind of preschool, and it was dress-up time in the afternoon. And this person, you know, ran over and put on the ballerina costume.
Okay.
And that was fine. But then the next week they went and did it again. And the other girls got quite like, why are they putting that dress on? We want that one. And, you know, the person then actually said, and then I noticed the 2 female teachers whispering and looking at me. And so kids are smart. Straight away, you know that this is not acceptable. So this disapproval was absolutely there. And so I think, you know, other people actually told me that they really didn't, they were never told that this was wrong. But they all had this sense that it really wasn't something you did. Mm. And so you kept quiet about it. You hid it. And you so you kind of move. This is the first thing of starting to hide part of yourself.
So when you were distilling all of these stories, were there certain themes and commonalities which are the same across all of them?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's part of what the process that I was using, which I'm going to try and say, the methodology that I use, and I might not be able to get it. This is the tongue twister.
Because we were talking about this off air.
Interpretative phenomenological analysis. I'm not going to try saying that again.
Another
I think
line.
It was close.
I'll take your word for that.
Okay.
What exactly does that process mean?
What does that mean? Okay. It's about collecting stories. It's about collecting what happened to people and them telling me. And then I actively interpret what's happened. So it's a very, it's quite a subjective approach to research, but it's, so it's a qualitative approach. So it's not about statistics and numbers. It's about pulling together sort of narratives from people. And then, yes, looking for themes, actually. So were there themes? Absolutely. There were basically four sort of themes. So there was this sense of, oh, I'm different in some way. And then there is the second theme was actually hiding, so like going into the closet. And then there's a sort of later in life a sort of theme that related to kind of emerging from that closet. So starting to stop the hiding and start to explore the gender expression and the individuality. And then the final sort of phase is what I've called coming out. So that some of the terminologies as well can get a bit confusing. So it's not necessarily about transition. It's about coming out and telling people, you know, I'm trans and this is what it means. And so I was able to look at the sort of the events and the experiences that each of these people had during those times. And yeah, look, there were a lot of common sort of themes. As I said, the first one was a general tendency to sort of feel that this isn't the right thing to do. So there was, for these people, there was a lot of secret cross-dressing, starting with, you know, borrowing sisters' or mother's clothes and so on. Mm. And a compulsion to do that and a need to do that to sort of be able to somehow express a feminine side and a feminine identity, but also knowing that they don't want anybody to know about that. And one of the greatest sort of fears was actually that their fathers would find out. Okay. That was a very common theme. Sometimes mothers did find out because mothers, as we know everything.
They do.
They're everywhere.
And they know absolutely everything.
And they notice when someone's been in their wardrobe. Mm. So, some of the people who took part in this did get caught, but more often than not, mothers didn't actually say anything.
Okay.
Which is interesting as well.
I want to understand in terms of looking at this, in terms of philias, in terms of, and when we say philias, we're referring to sexual attraction, and there's three distinct philias, that is androphilic, that is you're attracted to men, gynophilia, that you're attracted to women, and autophilia. What exactly does that mean? That's a sort of a different term altogether.
Autophilia? Well, do you mean autogynephilia or just autophilia?
Autophilia.
Autophilia is sort of love of oneself. That's, okay. You know, it's that love of the same. So
now, yeah. Autogynephilia, what's that?
Well, yeah, that's a term that's was kind of created, I think, a few decades ago now by some Canadian psychiatrists who were running a gender clinic in Toronto. And they kind of grouped people who were transgender into a number of special sort of – they have a somewhat different view and a fairly negative view towards transgender people. They seem to be sort of in some ways accepting of true transsexuals, who they felt that were people who came out very early in life and were, you know, genuinely, you know, of the opposite gender. And then they tended to group the others sort of tended to describe them really as being sort of homosexual males who wanted to be like women in order to be attractive to men. And they then also sort of grouped another group of people who were autogynephilic, who said they were attracted and turned on by seeing themselves as women.
Okay. And how does that sort of then relate to other concepts such as cross-dressing and cross-dressers? And
I think it confounds it. So, I mean, I think, and my opinion about some of this stuff is that there's no scientific basis to this. This is a very, actually probably a fairly negative view of gender identity and how it should be treated. And actually that clinic's been shut.
Mm.
So think that kind of that says something.
Sort of says enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, how does that relate? Look, I think when we look at broader aspects of gender identity, I think for many of us now we can see that, you know, there aren't just two genders, that there are sort of a, there's a big middle ground as well, and this this idea that of binary gender is perhaps, you know, losing ground now. So many people, many of us feel that we maybe are, you know, more feminine or more masculine. So we might be transmasculine or we might be transfeminine and we might be genderqueer. So there's a whole load of terminologies, but it might, you know, sort of means that we don't really feel that we fit into any one particular gender box, of the, especially of the two. So yeah, look, I think there are different ways that people express their, that gender and that variability of gender. So for some people, we use terms like cross-dressers, and some people refer to themselves as cross-dressers because they dress in the clothes of someone else, of the opposite, or if you like, technically the opposite, but it may not be an opposite gender. This is where it gets so confusing when we stop talking binary. But they, that may be, that's something they do. That's how they are able to express part of their identity, but they don't necessarily want to live as or transition to another gender.
So they're still happy with the gender they were assigned at birth?
They could well be, yes. But, I mean, that, that may well be the case.
But in a lot of the cases, it's either as a temporary relief or sometimes it could be potentially, say, sexual.
Yeah, yeah. Look, I think, you know, that, that that clearly happens. I mean, certainly that it probably, again, confounds things a bit. When people kind of get into exploring their identity, gender identity, especially during their sort of teenage years, you know, they are going through puberty. They've got a lot of hormones rushing around their body. So they're sexually triggered by an awful lot of things. And it can be that, you know, amongst other things, you know, you can be sort of sexually aroused and triggered by things that are different. You know, so that's that sort of almost kind of novelty kind of factor can become quite compelling. So it's that that may not have anything actually to do with specifically with gender identity. But I think from what I've seen, it's not uncommon for people to go through a phase of finding cross-dressing sexually arousing. But that, you know, I think it's important that we don't confuse sexuality, sexual arousal, with identity. So that's
two different things.
Yeah, look, and we, you know, we still live in a fairly puritanical society that as soon as we start to talk about sex and sexuality, you know, like everybody kind of switches off.
Which is a bit unfortunate. Yeah. I want to keep talking about this because I think there's probably some really good things that we can keep talking about. We're going to post some messages, and they've also got an amazing track lined up from Jesse J. So don't go anywhere. You are listening to Transpositions. Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9, making you dance. I'm feeling sexy and free.
You spin me out of control. Ooh, ooh, ooh.
Jesse J, Domino, you are listening to Transpositions, Joy 94.9. I've got Grace Lee in the studio with me. Grace is a psychotherapist, and we are talking about her thesis, which she did with relation to trans people who transition a little bit later in life. And we've been talking about lots of different things, and we were speaking about one of the things just off air a moment ago. We were talking about trans kids, and you did talk about it when we were on air in the last segment. We were talking about trans kids and when they sort of exhibit some cross-sex behaviours when they're quite young, the scorn or the negative look which some children do get. And the question that I asked you, and I want to probably elaborate on this a little bit if I can actually, is when we look at these children, is that some children will get the look and it's, oh no, this is a wrong thing, this is a bad thing for me to do, I'm not supposed to be doing this. Whereas some other children, they'll be in a quite supportive and encouraging family who allow the kids to, I suppose in one sense, start to explore this gender play and sort of work through their own gender identity issues. Do you think that when we look at it like that, that maybe we are sort of setting up as to how some people transition earlier in life and how also some transition later in life?
Yeah, look, I think there's every possibility of that because, I mean, you know, it really does make a difference. You pick up some of these negative signals really early on in your life and you go into the closet, you shut down that side of yourself, and that really leads to, you know, that's not as psychologically healthy as being able to feel free and express your own identity. So I think that, those... And I don't have any evidence for this, so this is kind of just personal opinion. I think those kids who, you know, have a supportive family who allow them to express themselves from an early age. What we do know is that quite a few kids who exhibit those cross-gender behaviours early will stop doing it. That's not unusual. So there's no harm done because, but they haven't had to live several years of feeling stigmatized or something because of what they've been doing. So I think that's important. So I think it's healthier psychologically. But those who do, once they get past whatever it is, 8, 9, 10, and they're still quite convinced about their gender identity, and we've got the really good services like in Melbourne here with the Children's Hospital who can provide all the support from there on in. I think we will be seeing people who are resilient, who've been well supported, and therefore much more healthy. So yes, it's about healthy transgender people. Those who have had to sort of suppress stuff for so much of their lives, tend to suffer one way or another, either because they perhaps regretted stuff that they haven't been able to express themselves. They've maybe done things in their life or not done things because of their gender identity. So, and some of them will have suffered severely in terms of their mental health over the longer period of time.
And there's some of the themes that you've seen coming out of the study that you've done.
Yeah, look, I mean, the way that people defend themselves as well, I mean, the coping mechanisms is some very common ones are certainly once people get into their teens, it's really one of complete sort of denial. And we were looking at male to female transgender people. So in that sort of situation, we were seeing guys who, took up martial arts, they took up boxing, they went into motorsport, they did all the guys type stuff, and many of us did that.
The hypermasculine things.
Yeah, basically, which is a strong sort of denial. And that helped kind of suppress, and generally that would be sort of describing it, like it's kind of suppressed the desires to express an alternative identity.
With the limited amount of time that we've got, was it with the people that you spoke to, with the behaviours that they were exhibiting with this hypermasculine behaviour, when you start to look at their families, they sort of really didn't see this coming at all because he was this hyper-masculine guy coming and saying, no, I'm actually transgender, I'm really a woman.
Yeah, that can be quite difficult for families. I mean, there are various ways that that people came out. And one of the important things I think that came out in the study was that by and large, you need to plan it. You need to actually really think about how you're going to express it to people, how you're going to explain it, and do it kind of carefully in a considered way, like, depending on where you are in life, whether it's your partner, whether it's your parents or your brother or sister or whatever, but actually to plan it. If you get to the end of your tether and then kind of just launch on everybody and tell them this, they will be very confused and they will struggle with a lot of that. So it's planning, you know, active kind of problem solving can be very effective. And what I've seen with the people who took part in this study was that, you know, they by and large have actually been able to come out and find acceptance. They're much happier. They've stopped living the lie, mm-hmm. as some of them would describe it. Mm-hmm. They live a more authentic life, and they've actually found they just wish they did it earlier. Is probably the biggest thing that they say.
Yeah, one of the things which I sort of come across, and even myself to an extent, you sort of say to yourself, gee, I wish I did this earlier, because life is so much different. And in a lot of cases, so much better once you actually come out and do start to transition. Mm. Grace, wow, it's such an amazing story and such an amazing work that you've done there. So I really do appreciate you coming through.
Thank you for inviting me on here.
Oh, it's all good. You can come through anytime you like, actually. Actually, I'll tell you what I might do is I might get you to come back again a couple more times, because you're a psychotherapist and you deal with trans people.
Yes, I work with trans people a lot, and genderqueer people and generally queer people.
I'm always looking for really good people to talk to about stuff from a more professional perspective. So would you come back and join us again?
Yes, absolutely. Yes. Try and keep me away.
Well, yeah, you're sort of welcome to come through as much as what you want. So thank you.
Megan, thank you very much.
Thank you. All right, you're listening to Transpositions, Joy 94.9. I'm going to play some messages and I'm going to be back shortly.
The world's most uplifting radio station, Joy 94.9.
So that is it. We have come to the end of another show. I hope you've enjoyed the music. I've also got one more really good track coming up, so make sure that you do stick around for that. Grace, thank you so much for joining us tonight. As I said before, it's been really good talking to you and learning some of the things that you've been working on.
Oh, that's great, and thank you everybody for listening to me.
Oh, we're happy talking to you. It's always good. Now, if you have missed our show, which hopefully you haven't, but if you have, we do have podcasts available. So if you go to Transpositions on our webpage, so go to joy.org.au/transpositions, you'll find our podcasts. Or you can also get our podcasts from the App Store. You can also download the Joy app as well from the App Store or from the Google Play Store. And also, if you want to email us during the week, you can do that. You can email us transpositions@joy.org.au. Also, our Facebook page. Come on, if you like the show, you've got to like our Facebook page. So go to facebook.com/transpositionsonjoy, and that's how you're going to get to our Facebook. Now I'm taking you out tonight with one of my good friends who I kind of like a lot. LaRue, I played her last week, and I'm playing her again tonight because I think the music's pretty cool. Thank you. Listen to Transpositions. We can find our desires. Ooh. But when we start making fires, we get ever so hot. Ooh. Whether we like it or not. They say we can love who we trust. Ooh.
most lovable radio station, Joy 94.9.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with Joy.